It's Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll-free. You can take control of the airwaves. You can bring up whatever it is that you want here on the radio. The number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Also, we have the Discord on-air call-in line rooms over at discord.lrn.fm. You can hop into one of those. You'll sound almost like you're sitting here in the studio with us. Now, of course, you can bring up whatever you want. That is the point here on Free Talk Live. Johnson will be in shortly. I think he's been held up in traffic or something like that. And it's Ian here with you.
And Arya Dembetso.
You were going to say something there? Sorry.
It generally happens a lot in the snow. I believe
there's
it started
snow
snowing.
Out there yet. But, no, there's okay. No snow out there yet. There's supposed to be one of these big, bad storms.
I think technically there is snow out there.
There is a little flurry, I would say, at the most. Like, there wasn't even any kind of coating on my car when I went out to go and grab some Indian food for which I paid cryptocurrency here.
Very awesome.
Beautiful little Keene, New Hampshire. Just, it tastes better when you pay with crypto.
I bought these cigarettes I've been rolling with crypto.
So, very nice. Yep. Very nice. We can do that here because we actually have a real community of cryptocurrency users. It's a small one. It's, you know, smaller than I'd like it to be. I'd love to see more crypto people moving to New Hampshire.
Absolutely.
And you know, getting active here and helping us, because the larger the contingent of cryptocurrency users, because we want actual users. If you're just a holder, well, you're not as valuable. It's nice that you're a holder. That's good. I'm not going to say that's a bad thing. It's cool. It's cool that you're into crypto, but using it's important. Using cryptocurrency makes it more real. It makes it more valuable. That's the purpose. The purpose of Bitcoin wasn't just to hold on to it. The purpose was to basically destroy the old money system. I mean, I can't speak for Satoshi Nakamoto, but that's my understanding of part of the motivation behind crypto.
That was how I read the whole thing, was that, you know, the goal was largely to destroy the financial institutions that had, you know, run free all over the world doing whatever they wanted.
Right. And that's changed now. And it's been different for now a decade. It was earlier this month that we celebrated the 10th anniversary of Bitcoin. And, you know, it's doing pretty well. It dropped a little bit over the last couple of days. I think it's around 3,300, maybe 3,400.
I think it's about 3,400.
Yeah,
well, it was during the crypto hour.
It was during. Okay, so you did a check on it recently, because on your show, The Call to Freedom, you guys do a whole hour dedicated to cryptocurrency and technology and gaming and things like that. So check out The Call to Freedom over at calltofreedomlive.com.
That's correct.
All right. Good, good. So we got lots to talk about here tonight. In fact, I do have a couple of Bitcoin stories I've been holding on to for a while. And on the way, we're going to talk about work. I know that Johnson's got a piece that he wants to talk about, jobs that seem pointless. I've got I don't know if hand-wringing is the right term for this. The headline over at the New York Times is, "Why are young people pretending to love work?" And this is unfortunate because it, you know, comes on the heels of an actual decent article on the New York Times. Now, of course, you know, their opinion page, I imagine, has people with different opinions. But there was actually a decent article that was anti-socialism in the New York Times.
Wow.
In relation to Venezuela. And it was not, you know, not nice at all to socialism. But in this case, it's got a graphic on the, like, a very large graphic on this story. And, you know, that sort of communist propaganda look where there's like the man and the woman looking upwards and, you know, they're holding on to their hammer and sickle or whatever it is they're holding on to. In this case, it's that kind of motif. It's some millennial looking, like there's like a hipster looking guy. There's an Asian guy. There's a black lady, and they're holding on to their tablet and their smartphone, and they're looking up, and they got like the black rimmed glasses and everything. They're you know, doing that same kind of looking up at the sky thing, except here, instead of like communist this and that, it says hustle across the top. And then across the bottom, it says TGIM. You know what that stands for, right?
Thank God it's Monday.
Right.
What I find most fascinating about that is that wasn't the whole workers' pride thing sort of critical to Marxist ideology in the first place?
Yes, absolutely.
So, and this writer here is like, oh, we need the communism, but without the workers' pride.
Well, apparently without the work. I think like a lot of communists, I mean, without having actually read this story fully, I think I sampled it and it's like, oh yeah, we got to talk about this. But without, you know, a lot of communists, they don't actually want to work. They want to live in a world where they have robots do everything for them. And then they can just, I don't know, create artwork all day or sit around and get high or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what they think it's going to be like.
I mean, that wouldn't be impossible, but we're nowhere near that technological level yet.
No.
Maybe one day.
Well, right. And they also believe that the robots are going to be able to, they're going to be able to do central planning with a computer. I don't know if you've heard about the what they call, I think it was Stefan Molyneux, back when he was an actual liberty-loving person. He called it Marxism with robots. It was this, there was a movie called Zeitgeist. You ever heard of it?
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it?
It started me down this ideological
path.
Did it really?
So yeah. We owe it to Zeitgeist, huh?
We do.
All right. Well, the whole part where they talked about...
Oh, they went full-blown communism by the second and third ones.
They were talking about like concentric cities, circled cities with a computer that would be like the master control for the entire world that would determine how resources were allocated. I mean, it was the maximum of central control, centrally controlled decision making.
That was him moving forward, I guess, the third one, because I didn't finish it.
Maybe. I don't know. I think I only saw the first one, but maybe you're right. Maybe it wasn't the third one. It's been years since I've seen any of those.
The first one was a sort of half-truth documentary about the Federal Reserve and religion and things like that. And then the second one was like, okay, well, here's other things that the state is doing that's messed up.
It must have been the third one then.
And the third one was like, and here's how we're
going
to fix it.
Right. So here's the headline here again. Why are young people pretending to love work? I saw the greatest minds of my generation log 18-hour days and then boast about hashtag hustle on Instagram. When did performative workaholism become a lifestyle? It's always been a lifestyle.
Yes, forever.
For those people who enjoy being productive. Never once. This is by Aaron Griffith, written just a few days ago. Never once at the start of my work week, not in my morning coffee shop line, not in my crowded subway commute, not as I begin my bottomless inbox slog, have I paused, looked to the heavens, and whispered, hashtag, thank God it's Monday.
I have not either, to be fair.
Me neither. Apparently, that makes me a traitor to my generation. I learned this during a series of recent visits to WeWork locations in New York. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
So I looked into WeWork. Apparently, it's one of those kind of you can rent a working space thing for your company, but it's not like how they have like these areas that you don't fully rent the whole space. You just kind of rent part of it, or if you need like an office for the day, you can do that. Or if you need a meeting space, you can use the meeting space at the time you need the meeting space, but at other times others might be using the meeting space. I think that's what they're doing over this WeWork.
Okay.
So it's like a company that rents out to other companies. Where are the throw pillows implore busy tenants to, quote, do what you love? Neon signs demand they, quote, hustle harder. And murals spread the gospel of TGIM. Even the cucumbers in WeWork's water coolers have an agenda. Don't stop when you're tired. There's actually a sticker on the water dispenser. Someone recently carved into the floating vegetable's flesh, stop when you're done. So don't stop when you're tired. Stop when you're done.
Kool-Aid, I agree with that sentiment.
Kool-Aid drinking. Well, you are the problem, according to this article. Kool-Aid drinking metaphors are rarely this literal. Welcome to hustle culture. It's obsessed with striving, relentlessly positive, devoid of humor, and, once you notice it, impossible to escape. Quote, rise and grind is both the theme of a Nike ad campaign and the title of a book by a Shark Tank shark. New media upstarts like The Hustle, which produces a popular business newsletter and conference series, and 137 PM, a content company created by the patron saint of hustling, Gary Vaynerchuk, glorify ambition not as a means to an end, but as a lifestyle. Quote, the current state of entrepreneurship is bigger than career, reads the 137 p.m. About Us page. It's ambition, grit, and hustle. It's a live performance that lights up your creativity, a sweat session that sends your endorphins coursing, a visionary who expands your way of thinking. We'll get more into this person who's writing this in the New York Times, their critique of workaholism, their critique of people who love working and love what they do. And they're saying that's a problem. I want to get your thoughts as well. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. Do you love what you do? Do other people not understand why you love what you do? There's somebody in the New York Times who just doesn't get it. They are really frustrated. This person, Erin Griffith, and it's Erin with an E-R, so I presume a female. She's frustrated with her compatriots, her her fellow man and woman who are actually loving their jobs. She doesn't believe it's possible. The headline that we're sharing here is from the New York Times. Why are young people pretending to love work? She just can't even understand why somebody would actually appear to love work. And if they appear to love work, she thinks it's fake, that they're pretending. So, Aria, you described yourself as work. Did you use the term workaholic?
I did not.
Okay.
But, I mean, anybody who spends an excessive amount of time with me will learn that I love being productive.
Yeah. I mean, you're here. This is actually your fourth hour already on the radio. You know, it's your first hour with Free Talk Live. But you were already the host of Call to Freedom this afternoon for 3 hours.
Right. And 2 hours before that, I was editing audio files and working on the podcast and things like that. Being productive is great. It feels good.
You work 5 days a week at a local pizza place here in town. So you were always hustling. And this is one of the things that bothers whoever this lady is that's writing this article. Johnson joining us here after getting stuck in Keene's rush hour traffic or whatever it was.
It's the storm of the century.
Yeah, it's barely a dusting out there thus far, but who knows? We'll see what happens later on. Hey, this is all brought to you by Bitcoin.com. It's your premier source of everything Bitcoin related, because if you are into productivity, you're probably into money. Just guessing. You're probably into earning some money, in which case you might want to learn about Bitcoin, because it's a way that you can protect the value that you've earned. You earned it, so you ought to not allow the government to steal it from you. And that's what the government does when they print out money. They steal the value that you've created for yourself. Bitcoin can't be touched by the government. And you can learn a whole lot more about it over at Bitcoin.com. They've got a great Bitcoin Academy that you can go through. Shouldn't take you more than 10 or 15 minutes, I don't think. Bitcoin.com. Get started over there. If you're not brand new to Bitcoin, you're still gonna find value over at Bitcoin.com. They've got the latest news headlines on their news site, news.bitcoin.com. You can also engage with their community on the Bitcoin Forum over at Bitcoin.com. TGIM, Johnson. TGIM. You ever heard of that one?
Thank God it's Monday?
Yeah, apparently that's a thing. And so we're talking about this story here where this lady at New York Times, she is just bewildered by why anybody in her age range, I presume she's a millennial, why anybody would enjoy actually working. She's talking about these.
I would think if she is a millennial, she's very accomplished.
What do you mean? Because she's writing for the New York Times?
Well, she's also been writing for Adweek. She was a senior reporter for Reuters all the way back in 2007. Before that, she was working for Merger Market for almost 2 years.
So I mean, it sounds like she's been doing a bit of hustling herself.
Yeah. So she graduated from Ohio University with a Bachelor of Science in 2005.
So she's a millennial. 05. That's
barely. I mean, that's barely. Really close to Gen X.
Not that close. I'm on the border, and I graduated in the late 90s. So okay. I'm borderline.
You graduated college?
College. No. Okay. High school in the late 90s.
Okay.
Yeah. But still, college, she's definitely a millennial. Like, there's no question. She's an early millennial, but she's a millennial.
Okay. Fair enough.
Late millennial, because it would be late in the millennial generation, because she's almost Gen X.
That's
she's
I mean.
Like she's like yeah. one high school class away from being Gen X.
I'd say she's a couple years, because generally it's like 1980 to 2000.
Yeah, that's
generally.
What I'm saying. She's within a 4 or 5 year range period of being Gen X.
So let me go on here. This we're talking about her frustration with these people who like to actually work. Ryan Harwood, the chief executive of let me jump back a little bit more here. This is a quote from 1:37 p.m., which is one of these. She describes this as a content company that produces a popular business newsletter and conference series. Quote, "The current state of entrepreneurship is bigger than careers," says 1:37 p.m.'s About Us page. It says further, quote, "It's ambition, grit, and hustle. It's a live performance that lights up your creativity, a sweat session that sends your endorphins coursing, a visionary who expands your way of thinking," unquote. From this point of view, not only does one never stop hustling, one never exits a kind of work rapture in which the chief purpose of exercising or attending a concert is to get inspiration that leads back to the desk. Ryan Harwood, the chief executive at 1:37 p.m.'s parent company, told me that the site's content is aimed at a younger generation of people who are seeking permission to follow their dreams. He said, quote, they want to know how to own their moment at any given moment. Owning one's moment, says the author here, is a clever way to rebrand surviving the rat race. In the new work culture, enduring or even merely liking one's job is not enough. Workers should love what they do and then promote that love on social media, thus fusing their identities to that of their employers. Well, now, wait a minute. I think this person is confusing entrepreneurship with a job.
Certainly.
So that's not the same thing. You're not an entrepreneur if you're going to work for somebody else, in my opinion. You're an entrepreneur when you strike out on your own and you do your own thing. And in which case, you better love it because you can put in as many hours as you want to into your own thing.
And you're going to need to, realistically.
Yeah, to compete.
Yeah.
I mean, you were just talking about this yourself, Aria. You are now the person in charge of the Call to Freedom website, as I understand it.
Correct.
Right? So that didn't start with you, but it's a responsibility that you've taken on. Yep. And that's one of those things. You know this, Johnson. If you want to pour as much time as you want to into web development, you can pour as much time as you want to into it. Now, at some point, you're going to get diminishing returns, right? At some point, you have to be able to say it's complete, even if it may not be perfect, because, again, perfection is the enemy of the complete. If you're always trying to seek that level of perfection, you're never going to get to it. So it's important to be able to be able to assess where you're at and whatever it is you're trying to accomplish and say, all right, that's good enough. Let's move on to the next task, because there's always going to be something else. After you've updated the website, then you've got to be doing something else, editing some audio or whatever it is, or you know, moving on to the next project. There's always something else on the to-do list. And at times it can overwhelm.
Sure.
It can definitely overwhelm. Like I've been buried in emails before, and I don't much enjoy that feeling, because there's some tasks when you're an entrepreneur that are more rewarding than others, right? It's not as much fun to scrub the toilets, you know, as it is to talk on the radio, for instance. So, you know.
Touché.
Yeah. So back to the complaining here. In the new work culture, enduring or even merely liking one's job is not enough. Workers should love what they do. Why else would LinkedIn build its own version of Snapchat stories? This is toil glamour, and it's going mainstream. Most visibly, WeWork, which investors recently valued at $47 billion. Is on its way to becoming the Starbucks of office culture. It has exported its brand of performative workaholism to 27 countries with 400,000 tenants, including workers from 30% of the global Fortune 500. In January, WeWork's founder, Adam Neumann, announced that his startup was rebranding itself as the We Company to reflect an expansion into residential real estate and education. Describing the shift, Fast Company wrote, quote, rather than just renting desks, the company aims to encompass all aspects of people's lives in both physical and digital worlds. The ideal client, one imagines, is someone so enamored of the WeWork office aesthetic, whip-cracking cucumbers and all, that she sleeps in a WeLive apartment, works out at the Rise by We gym, and sends her children to a WeGrow school.
Whip-cracking cucumbers?
In moments. It's Free Talk Live.
Bitcoin.com is delighted to announce their latest partnership with the gift card specialists at eGifter. With many of the world's leading brands on their roster, it is now easier than ever to get the gift cards of your favorite brands with Bitcoin Cash. To get started, just follow these simple steps. Visit giftcards.bitcoin.com, pick the gift card you want, follow the instructions on your screen, and make your payment using your Bitcoin Cash wallet. Sit tight and your gift card will be delivered to you as soon as it's ready. That's giftcards.bitcoin.com.
This is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up whatever it is that you want. Dial in toll-free here at 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're exploring one person's view of working. It does not appear to be a particularly happy view. This is an author over at the New York Times, Aaron Griffith, who is bewildered by why it is that Erin is seeing her compatriots. I don't know if that's the right term. I'm looking for something else. Anyway, the people her age.
Her peers.
Thank you for that, yeah. that she's seeing them enjoying working and being excited by working.
I think she just doesn't understand what she's seeing. I mean, does she enjoy writing? One would assume that she does.
Well, prior to working for the New York Times, she worked for Wired.
As a writer.
Maybe it's a better environment to write at New York Times than it was to write at Wired.
Well, it would certainly pay better.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah.
I'm sure it would.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Wired's been around for a while, too. Wired's certainly no startup at this point.
No.
But, so she's...
I mean, she's done a bit of hustling herself, but what she does, she enjoys, so she doesn't really consider it to be work and hustling.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Is it work and hustling if you are, you know, doing it for yourself, if you are an entrepreneur? I think it absolutely is. But she seems to be conflating, at least at this part of the story, conflating entrepreneurialism with just working a job. And you can be excited about your job. I'm not saying that's impossible. I mean, there are definitely people out there who have jobs that they love.
Sure.
And they're excited to show up in the morning and come to work. I mean, that's ideally who you want to hire, is somebody who has actually got a smile on their face when they come in the morning most days and is excited to stay there. I mean, you want to have somebody like that working for you. I imagine it's a little bit more difficult to find people with that level of enthusiasm for working for somebody else. So I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with this attitude of enjoying work. But she seems to be just flummoxed by it. We're going to continue with the story here. And then, Johnson, you've got a related, I would say related. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the story, but yours is from Reason.com. Why do so many modern jobs seem pointless? So kind of another aspect of this whole work situation that we find ourselves with here in 2019. So she's talking right now about a company called WeWork, which you said you were already familiar with them, Johnson?
Yeah, a little bit. Yep.
Was my supposition correct? I mean, just having glanced at their website, it looks like one of those shared working spaces where you need an office for an hour, you can go
it's
in
like
there.
It's like a chain shared working space, essentially what it is.
Yeah, and apparently
it's like the McDonald's of shared working.
Right, and then, you know, those shared working spaces, it seems to make sense. You know, if you don't need that office every single day, all day long, why not let somebody else use it? It's just a desk with chairs, you know, a large conference table with chairs. Why do you need to have that just sitting there unused? I mean, it's sort of the idea of the in the cities where they got those cars that people share, basically, where you drive the car to a place, you leave the car, and then somebody else can log in and pick that car up and take it somewhere else. It makes sense because in a place like a city, space is at a minimum. Space on the roads is at a minimum, and so just having a car sitting in a parking spot all day while you're working for 8 hours is inefficient. That car could be utilized. It could be used by somebody who needs to go make a delivery or somebody who needs to go home or whatever. So I think these are interesting ideas, and apparently, again, this WeGrow thing has worked out for them. They've expanded into 27 countries, 400,000 tenants. And now they're expanding into places where people can work. And this lady, who's writing the article, finds that to be very disturbing. She says, from this vantage office space, the Gen X slacker pay-in that came out 20 years ago next month feels like science... 20 years. Wow. Feels like science fiction from a distant realm. It's almost impossible to imagine a startup worker bee of today confessing, as protagonist Peter Gibbons does, quote, "It's not that I'm lazy, it's that I just don't care." Workplace indifference just doesn't have a socially acceptable hashtag.
That was unimaginable when the movie was made. No, nobody was going to go into their office and tell the, what were they called? I don't remember.
The consultants.
The consultants. I don't care. It's right. Not that I hate my job, I just don't care. That wasn't going to happen no. 20 years ago either, lady. No.
She says it's
That's
not.
Why it's a movie.
It's a movie. It's a comedy.
Right. It was a comedy, yeah, specifically.
If you haven't seen it, definitely see it. It's great. It's not difficult to view hustle culture as a swindle.
I'm going to need you to go ahead and see that movie.
Just file your TPS report first. After all, convincing... So she says hustle culture is a swindle. After all, convincing a generation of workers to beaver away is convenient for those at the top. Quote, "The vast majority of people beating the drums of hustle mania are not the people doing the actual work. They're the managers, financiers, and owners," said David Heinemer Hansen, the co-founder of Basecamp, a software company. We spoke in October as he was promoting his new book, quote, "It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work," about creating healthy company cultures. Mr. Hansen said that despite data showing long hours improve neither productivity nor creativity, myths about overwork persist, because they justify the extreme wealth created for a small group of elite techies. He says it's grim and exploitative. Now, we did see some story within the last year. There was a news story about a company in Australia that tried a different work week schedule. They cut down from 5 days to a 4-day work week. Now, the idea was that you still had all your responsibilities that, you know, you had to get done. And I feel like I can't remember if they extended the length of time the people were at the office on the 4 days. I don't remember that detail. But either way, what they found was that having a 4-day work week allowed their workers to be happier and still get all their work done. And it made them more productive in the time that they had because there was less downtime of them, you know, flipping around on Facebook or, you know, basically just goofing off.
So did you comment already on the verbiage of the whip cracking cucumbers?
Thank you for the reminder. So actually you can see here that somebody has carved into the cucumbers in their water cooler at the WeWork place the words, "Don't stop when you're tired, stop when you're done." So that's what they're talking about.
This is a cucumber slice?
Yes.
And somebody carved
like
all of that into one?
It's like a strip of cucumber.
Okay.
So it's
four strips. So it's four
strips.
And
then they carved away everything but the skin to leave the skin to be the letters.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's whatever.
And it's
weird.
Well, it's interesting that this picture was taken by somebody who tweeted and says, "Big shock that WeWork are promoting burnout culture."
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see that. That's Steve Buckley on Twitter who said that. Let's see here. So it's grim and exploitative, says this so-called expert. Elon Musk, who stands to reap stock compensation upward of $50 billion in his company, Tesla, meets certain performance levels, is a prime example of extolling work by the many that will primarily benefit him. He tweeted in November that there are easier places to work than Tesla, quote, "But nobody ever changed the world on 40 hours a week," unquote. The correct number of hours varies per person, he continued, but is about 80 sustained, peaking at about 100 at times. Pain level increases exponentially above 80. So see, this is the evil Elon Musk who's trying to motivate his employees to do twice as much work as they should. Is there something inherently wrong with doing 80 hours a week instead of 40?
Not if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say there's certainly something definitely wrong with Elon Musk and his attitude about it.
Tell me about that. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you can certainly be productive and more efficient with your time without necessarily adding more time to it. Like you were just talking about the Australian company mm-hmm. that shifted down to a 4-day work week and found themselves becoming more efficient.
Right.
It's a matter of diminishing returns. And he himself sort of alluded to it by saying that, you know, the pain increases substantially at over 80 hours per week. Well, yeah, and productivity substantially declines at anything over probably about 60.
Well, because you're going to start losing sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't get your house cleaned.
That's if you're working for the 5 days, you know, Monday through Friday, and you're working 80 hours during that Monday through Friday time period, then if you're getting a healthy amount of sleep, you're at least getting 8 hours, and you have no commute, mm-hmm. right? Then you're talking about being working from the moment you wake up to the moment you sleep, because it's 16 hours.
The toll-free number here tonight, 855-450-FREE. That said, if you are an actual entrepreneur,
right,
somebody
yeah,
like Chris Reitman, who is on our Thursday night show, he's in that shop as many days as he possibly can be. They're taking one day off each week due to the winter. But anyway, more coming up. We'll talk more. This is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up whatever you want. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. And we're going to continue here. We'll take your calls and thoughts about whatever you want to discuss. Of course, that's what we do here. But we also got stuff we think that you might find interesting, like this story, an opinion piece over at the New York Times that is just bewildered by why people love to work. Now, I kind of understand part of where she's coming from with the overwork culture, the idea that you're not valuable unless you're doing 80 hours a week. I think there's a fallacy to that. I don't think that, you know, you have to to put in that amount of time to be a productive person. And that's kind of what she's been talking about here with Elon Musk apparently encouraging his people to work 80 to 100 hours per week rather than 40. So I can understand, you know, that. And ultimately, the competitive marketplace should be bringing the number of hours that people work down over time. And I think that's to some extent happened. But we can continue with that discussion here with you tonight. It's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Aria.
But there's also just the confusion on this person's part of the difference between being an entrepreneur and an actual worker, and just bewilderment on their part of why people love work, why people would even want to work more than 40 hours. This person writing the article doesn't seem to even understand that. As we go back to the to the phones here for the first time, we got Ron on the line in Florida to start things out here. Excuse me, Ron in New York. Ron, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hi. Hey. I was wondering, what are your thoughts on Justin Amash potentially seeking the Libertarian nomination for president? And also, what do you think about Howard Schultz potentially running as an independent for president?
Howard Schultz, that's the Starbucks CEO, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he says he might run as a as an independent for president. And now a lot of Democrats are freaking out because they think he's, because they believe in the spoiler myth. So they think, oh, well, now he's going to take away votes from us, and it's going to let Trump win.
Yeah, I don't. By the way, I don't know if you're talking through a sock or something like that, but it's it's kind of you're a little muffled tonight. But we did understand your questions. Have you guys been following these presidential suggestions?
People, I mean, I've been following Starbucks in the past, and yuck.
I mean, we're still nearly 2 years away from the presidential election.
We're,
I mean, let's be honest.
We're 1 year away from the New Hampshire primary.
And the Libertarians have already had a presidential debate.
Have they really?
They have. I mean, it's a complete mess.
Yeah.
We have let politics in general just consume way, and I say this while being on a political talk radio show, but we've let politics consume way too much of our lives.
I wouldn't call this a political talk radio show. I mean, just because we're on talk stations that tend to be political, I find politics to be despicable. I find politicians to be awful. I don't want to spend my time talking to them. We don't, you know, we haven't mentioned a single politician tonight until Ron called in.
True.
So, yes, we will take calls about politics, but honestly, I don't pay attention to this stuff. In fact, that was one of Chris Cantwell's complaints about me, was that whenever he and I are talking, he's always like, he always knows what's going on with D.C. and who's doing what, and he says I'm a terrible talk show host because I don't know that crap, but I'm not interested in it, so why should I know it? You know, it doesn't matter to me. So this Justin Amash guy, he, as I recall, is the somewhat liberty-friendly Republican guy, basically.
I would say he's the best of the Libertarian caucus. What do they call themselves?
Is he a U.S. rep?
Freedom Caucus.
The Freedom Caucus. Yeah, I would say Amash is the best among those.
Is he a rep or a senator?
I think he's a rep.
He's a rep.
Okay. Now, are you just speculating that this guy is going to run, or has he been saying that he's thinking about running?
Well, he was speculating because he was at the Young Libertarian Conference, and he said that he was talking about the potential for a 2020 run, and he said, the Libertarians can't nominate what he called a squishy Republican. Those were his words. And then Bill Weld yelled at, I guess Bill Weld was in the audience, and he started saying, yeah, I'm a squishy Republican. You should.
What does that even
president mean?
What is a squishy Republican?
I think he's like a Gary Johnson.
But what does it mean to be squishy? Do they like hugs? I don't. What does that mean?
Who doesn't like free hugs?
Like a lightweight libertarian, I think he was thinking of.
A what libertarian?
A lightweight.
Lightweight. I see. Well, I mean, from what I understand about the guy, he's a lightweight. I mean, he's certainly not, he's a Republican. He's not a libertarian.
You said this was Bill Weld criticizing him?
No, Bill Weld said he should run.
Okay.
While he was giving a speech, Bill Weld just like got up and rudely interrupted him.
Now, for listeners that don't know, Bill Weld was the vice presidential nominee of the Libertarian Party in 2016. He was terrible. He's a Republican. He is a former governor of Massachusetts. I'd never heard of the guy before he got into that race and ended up winning that nomination. But he ended up endorsing Hillary Clinton from the campaign trail on more than one occasion. I mean, it was just an absolute mess.
Well, he was he he was always kissy-kissy, lovey-lovey with her. I mean,
he's best friends with her.
The Watergate.
He's old buddies. Yeah, he's old buddies with her from way, way back. And so, no, I mean, Ron, it's hard to get excited about any Republican running for the Libertarian nomination at all. So that's what I'll say about that. And then what was the other question? It was Amash and who else?
Howard
Schultz. Oh, the Starbucks guy. Great. I think he should run for an independent seat. The more candidates, the better for people to choose from, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, from what I understand, he's basically a lefty. This is the former CEO. He is no longer the CEO of Starbucks, correct?
Yeah.
Well, I think ideally having a large number of candidates would put so much pressure on the Republicans and Democrats to include them in the debates that it would do very good things.
Especially somebody like Schultz, who is presumably a billionaire. I mean, he's or at least very, very wealthy. He's probably done pretty well for himself if he was the CEO of Starbucks. Yeah. Somebody like that is more likely to get... It's probably less likely to be ignored by the media in that case. So there you go, Ron. Anything else you want to share?
I feel like if Schultz runs, the Democrats, I think if the Democrats like get a candidate that's terrible and that candidate ends up losing, they're just going to blame it on Schultz. And if Trump loses because he runs a bad campaign, he's probably just going to blame it on Schultz as well. Because
there's this
spoiler myth that Ross Perot is responsible for 1992 and Ralph Nader is responsible for Al Gore losing, when in all reality that none of that's true.
Thanks for the call tonight, Ron. I appreciate hearing from you. Now, if you want to talk about the political nominations and such, I got to say, I hope John McAfee does pretty well as far as getting the Libertarian Party's nomination. I know he's going
to
go for it.
I did until he tried to shill a scam coin to me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Let's talk about that. Because this was crazy. You talked about it on the Call to Freedom earlier this week, I think it was, or yesterday.
Yeah.
You just happened to get an instant message from him?
I did. It was very
on
weird.
On Facebook?
Yeah. Not something.
Had you ever talked to him before?
No. I mean, I've...
Are you friends with him?
No. I've commented back and forth on occasion.
Are you sure it was actually him?
It may have been a bot.
But did it come from his account?
It was absolutely John McAfee's account.
Are you somebody who likes one of his pages?
No.
How in the world did he end up hitting you up then? That's what I wanted to know. If it were a bot, that he would just automatically be sending messages to everyone who likes a thing that he does, right? Like one of his pages on Facebook, get a list of whoever it is that likes the page, and then just start sending your bot to send a promotional message to every single person there. But you're saying you don't like any of the things that he's got on Facebook.
Not that I'm aware of.
Maybe it's a friend of a friend or something like that. Maybe somehow he's got a bot that's like tracing through his
searching based on crypto keywords.
Will that pull up somebody's profile?
Good, absolutely.
Yeah. Think so. Okay. So what happened with McAfee?
So after a bit of conversation about his upcoming 2020 presidential campaign, where he directed me to their Discord chat and things like that.
So it was a promotional campaign thing. It was like, I'm running for president. Here's my Discord chat. I hope you'll support me. Was that kind
of sort
of,
except it was more direct than that. Mm-hmm. It was less politician-y. Mm-hmm. I suppose it was more human being to human being, or so it's saying, or human being to bot.
But yeah, okay.
If it's a bot, it's a very good bot for the
most
part.
So did you ask some questions that the bot responded to, or the person, or
I did.
Maybe it's not a bot. Maybe he hired some kid in India or something like that, right?
Sure.
With some canned responses, but what? How
it
did
was
you try
odd
to, test
to me.
It?
Well, I didn't have any ideas on how to test it beyond asking it questions and trying to get answers, or asking him questions and trying to get answers. I did ask him. I did notice that any of the questions I asked him, strangely, like he was taking a high school test, contained the question within the answer. Like if I said something like "How's the oceanic life?" he would respond,
"He's on a boat now.
The oceanic life is awesome." And it's just a weird way for a human being to speak. It's like, I acknowledge the words you used. Mm-hmm.
My question is if he wins the presidency and Bitcoin is not $500,000, does he still follow through?
On his promise to eat a portion of himself on national television if Bitcoin doesn't reach, you said $500,000?
Is that like how he fulfills the State of the Union address one year or something?
I don't know. There's more coming up, though. We can talk more about the McAfee bot, suspected bot, and working. Too much?
Smart Cash is a peer-to-peer digital currency that is fast, secure, and easy to use. Smart Cash also features smart rewards, a price stabilization mechanism, and a way to encourage long-term holding. Long-term holders are key to the project's success. You can earn smart rewards on any address for which you hold the private keys, which holds at at least 1,000 Smart for 1 month and does not make any outgoing transactions during that time. Smart rewards are distributed every 47,500 blocks to all eligible addresses. Learn more at smartcash.cc.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. We're launching into the second hour of the program. Joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Aria.
And don't forget, you can join us online. Head over to freetalklive.com and enjoy the features that we have on our website for you. They are completely free. Archives that go back for more than a decade, all free over at freetalklive.com. We're going to go back into your calls and thoughts about what you want to discuss, and then more from this story of this New York Times columnist who is just flummoxed by why it is people would actually enjoy their work. Why it is that people, the headline just says it all, really. The headline, why are young people pretending to love work? She just could not possibly believe that someone would actually love their work. So they must be pretending. They couldn't possibly actually want to show up to their jobs. They couldn't possibly want to run a business. So we'll get back into that. But first, we go to Rev. He's in Florida listening online. Go ahead, Rev.
Yo, yo, yo. What up, ho? How you girls doing tonight?
What's up, Rev?
What's up?
What? Yo, what's going on? Hey, you got a package coming your way there, my friend, Mr. Freeman. You're going to enjoy it. I'm just sad you're not going to be able to show the artwork on the air. But
yeah, are you sending us some sort of obscenity?
Are you assuming you would enjoy obscenity?
I can show you a preview.
I'll put a T. Oh, yeah. Oh, she can.
I think I should wait. I want to be surprised.
Okay. Oh, you will be. Okay. You like Yoda, you will be, which, no offense, but Johnson kind of can sound like a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, you could totally do a Yoda.
Speaker, mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, some of the Rad-A-Gen guys.
Look as good you are not. No,
so the reason, yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything too great tonight, but real quick with this whole, this girl. Oh, you
what
guys
girl?
Heard about Buzz? The girl complaining about working. Did you hear about BuzzFeed and Huffington Post having to slash their numbers due to lack of revenue and all that?
Yep.
Yeah, I heard something about that. I don't know if you guys were talking about On Call to Freedom the other day.
We discussed it during the third hour yesterday.
Yeah, that's where I heard about it. Was On Call to Freedom, which you can go and check out at calltofreedomlive.com. That's Aria's show, as you already know, Rev, but I was saying that for the audience that may not have been aware about that. But, yeah, it looks like tough times for Huffington Post. They had to cut staff.
How do they make that choice without discrimination?
You have to discriminate.
Right. Well, not to get into that, you know, controversial field, because even I get tired of it sometimes, believe it or not. But, you know, if they'd have spent less time on forced to mass diversity hires and more time on maybe just actual journalism like Aria and Will were talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's understandable. You got to have your bias, your, you know, part of the paradigm, whatever. But, I mean, it's just so funny, man. Even with millions of dollars behind them, even with these big donors, they still failed, dude. They're not reaching. Maybe a lot of the millennials are still sipping their stupid Kool-Aid, and I'm in that age range too. But, man, Generation Z is woke, son. I'm not going to say the other thing.
Generation Z is woke?
Well, they're getting woke to this leftist SJW.
No, hold on. Generation Z is what, people who are born like now? Or, oh, it's after the millennials?
No.
Yeah. So
after
as of like 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The young ones. And granted, they're still indoctrinated too to some extent, but, you know.
What are they woke to, though, in your mind?
Well, think about this. If you're growing, like, okay, every generation, there's the theory that seems to have quite a bit of weight that you tend to revolt against whatever your society, family,
sure,
et cetera, are trying to morally imprint on you or
yep,
whatnot.
That seems to be the cycle. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if it doesn't make sense. You know, if it's like look both ways before you cross the street or wipe yourself after you go to the bathroom. Okay, that's pretty pragmatic stuff. But if it's like, you should not be enforcing patriarchy or blah, blah, like in the old days when the Christian right, which, believe it or not to get into me, but that's what made me a huge leftist back in the day, Ian.
Oh,
I know,
okay.
it's hard to picture me an SJW social progressive, but I was. But, dude, that's what it was, is like the Christian far right, and Aria can relate to this, especially her, you know, coming straight from the South. But it's like, dude, they went so insane with this dogmatic stuff that it's like, you know, you just can't help but feel alienated by that. So now that the pendulum has swung into believe women, Me Too, you know, Black Lives Matter and all this trash, you're seeing that backlash, man. And we're dancing on the rooftops, those of us in our circles. So
now, wait, are you a millennial?
Technically, I'm old. I'm 31, but I guess that makes me a millennial.
yeah, it does. So you're happy. You're saying that Generation Z is going to push back against this, you know, believe women no matter what they say kind of concept, Me Too?
Well, yeah, it's not so much even like an attack against women. It's just to mindlessly, like, did you know that the Department of Justice has done studies, and you can look it up, that about some certain years, 40% of rape cases were found to be either fraudulent or have the allegations rescinded. Mm. So, yes, I'm saying that, and I'm saying that just like the more insane and vitriolic the far left gets, the more of us become radicalized to the right, just like 10 years ago.
Let me ask you a question real quick. Okay, so you say you used to be a leftist SJW. What was your age around that time? How old were you?
What was it? Oh, I was, fundamentalist Christian theocrat from 16 to 18. I was about 20 years old to about 25, 26, yeah.
So roughly the same age as Gen Z today.
Around the younger.
And yet you
side.
No longer hold those views. The point I'm getting at is that I would not put a lot of stock into the political positions and the social positions that are held by people who are 16 to 20 years old.
Because they'll change.
Yeah. I used to be a hardcore communist.
Really?
Yeah.
I know. But Ari, the social climate had not shifted so much back then. Back then, leftism was a more pure, egalitarian, almost, dare I say, quote, libertarian kind of thing. It was like, hey, look, gay people pay taxes. Maybe they should have, you know, certain rights or whatever the heck and stuff like that. Now it's like if you're, well, I won't get into certain color subjects, but, you know, if you're male, you're a rapist, or if you're male, you're oppressing women. If you're straight, you're oppressing gays. So, and real quick, if you don't believe
I realize the media pushes that narrative that people say that, but I know a lot of millennials, and I don't know any who actually fit into that mindset.
Oh, I do. And you know what's worse than the ones that
aren't actually met these millennials who say that being a white man is automatically oppressive.
Let's put it to you this way, hon. The same ones that hypothetically I would maybe enjoy seeing in a wood chipper, I was on their side and I wanted to put the other side, the straight people, the white people. Oh, sorry.
So you simply joined the other side of the people marching with pitchforks.
Well, I've always been in the...
You got to let go of the wood chipper, Rev. It's not going to solve any of your problems.
Ian, we could put a nice "Don't Tread on Me" snake on it. Maybe Aria could put like a trans sticker. Have some fun with the wood chippers, man. They're on sale.
No, it's not fun to put someone in a wood chipper. It's not fun, Rev.
Hey, and one last thing.
I suspect you would find that out if you ever tried it.
Well, some of our stuff is hyperbolic.
So, yeah.
Some of it's not. It depends, you know, if we're on the radio or not. But listen, there's a picture of a yearbook picture of some kids a few months ago. I can't exactly say on the radio the gesture that they were doing, but let's just say it's not too far from our buddy Chris. So I would encourage you to look into that and see that they're getting sick of this. And the final thing, Ari, you said that that weird thing.
A yearbook?
Nazi salute.
A Nazi thing. Oh, okay.
I did all kinds of stupid crap.
I thought he was talking about
school,
like the Shocker or something like that.
I don't know why he couldn't just say Nazi salute. You can't say Nazi salute on the radio
or
something.
You can definitely say that on the radio. Thank you, Rev, for the call tonight, man. I appreciate it.
Say Zeke Heil.
What? Get out of here. Toll-free number here is 850. This Rev, we saw his, I don't know if it was his Facebook or
idolizes Cantwell.
Twitter. It was his Twitter. Yeah, he's really into Cantwell, but he's also like gay.
He's genderqueer.
What is a genderqueer?
I don't know. I asked him. He didn't answer.
So that was his term that he used?
Yes. When we Googled it, a coworker and I, we were Googling it today because I didn't know what it meant either, and I figured he would know.
You as a transsexual didn't know what a genderqueer was.
It's apparently someone who identifies as neither male nor female, but something in between. It's really vague and really ambivalent.
Yeah. So, well, rest assured, based on what I saw from Rev's Twitter, which is basically I think it was actually Arterial Salad in our chat room who dug up his DeviantArt channel as well. It's basically photos of Rev, his backside, him standing out at like a pool or on a beach or something in a thong. So, like, this guy
That's
is...
That's his Twitter profile pic, yeah. Okay.
He's not going to be welcome in the Cantwell Society, but yet he idolizes him. There's more coming up here in moments.
And they all idolize that Archie Bunker, I think.
We got more coming up here. This is Free Talk Live. You can join us. It is Free Talk Live. You're invited if you want to join us here on the radio. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Like freedom, 855-450-3733. We've got the Discord on-air call-in line rooms over at discord.lrn.fm. Jump into one of those. You'll sound almost like you're sitting here in the studio with me, Ian.
And Aria. Me, Johnson.
Ooh.
Sorry.
Johnson and Aria. And we're going to get back into your calls, but then we do have to continue on this workaholism story by the very confused New York Times writer who could not understand why people her age are actually enjoying working. We'll get into that here, but also something that a lot of us enjoy here in the studio is cryptocurrency. It's one of those things that you can just kind of get lost in and spend as many hours on learning about it and getting into it and trading it as you want to. It's a very, very deep world, and there's a lot of cryptocurrency options out there in the marketplace. So I'd like to suggest one that you should take a look at. It's Smart Cash. It's a peer-to-peer digital currency. It's fast, secure, and it's easy to use. And that's true of a lot of cryptocurrencies, but what is it that makes Smart Cash different? Well, first of all, it seems like there's a lot of libertarians that are behind it because they've been sponsoring all manner of different liberty-friendly talk shows and, you know, YouTube channels and things like that. So it's good to see them reaching out to the libertarian community because that's what helped build Bitcoin into the success that it is today. They've got a smart hive governance model that is pretty unique, from what I understand, allowing everyone who has any amount of Smart Cash to participate. If you have one smart, you have one vote. So if you have more than one smart, you've got more than one vote. Now, you do need to hold the Smart Cash in your own wallet that you control the keys for. So you don't just leave it on an exchange. Otherwise, you don't have any vote. You got to have it in your actual smart wallet. And they do have their official wallets for both mobile and for like a full node installation on their website, smartcash.cc. In fact, they've got the voting system built right into the wallet. It makes it super easy to cast your votes on the various different proposals that are made. So one of the proposals was to advertise on Free Talk Live, which we appreciate the folks who voted for that. You can go to smartcash.cc and you'll also learn about smart rewards, which rewards you for holding on to smart cash. So if you're going to do smart rewards, you want to have one wallet to hold it. And then if you want to have a wallet from which you can spend, you ought to have a separate wallet for that because you don't want to spend from the savings wallet, the smart rewards wallet. If you spend from it, it'll invalidate your smart rewards. So the trick is you have to have at least 1,000 smart, which isn't hard to get 1,000 smart. We're talking less than $20 worth of smart. 1,000 smart. Hold on to that for at least a month's time with no outgoing transactions, and you have to control the keys to the wallet. So then the more months you hold it, the more smart rewards you get. You get rewarded once a month, and it's a pretty cool system. Go to smartcash.cc to learn more and get started. That's smartcash.cc. Let's go to the phones to Sarah in New Mexico, and then we'll talk more about working and workaholism. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
I just want to mention that, you know, Albuquerque crime rate overall has been going down with a Democratic mayor.
It's true across all of the United States.
Well, I'm talking about just here in Albuquerque.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
With our last Republican mayor, our crime rate was going up and up, and we have, and so. I predicted this. I called in before the election that with a new Democratic mayor, we're going to have our crimes go down.
Now, why do you think? Do you think the criminals in Albuquerque feel better now that there's a Democratic mayor and they don't want to rob and rape as much anymore?
Well, you know what?
What kind of crime went down? You say crime went down. Are you referring to violent crime or like pot arrests?
So just property crime, violent crime, and all of the crimes put together.
Well, but Aria asked you an important question. I don't know if you really followed what she was asking you. When the government talks about crime, they're referring to any violation of a code, any violation of the statutes of the town ordinances, whether it be littering, whether it be smoking pot, whether it be, you know, an actual rape or a murder. All of that is considered to be crime as a category. But Aria, you asked, is violent crime down, meaning crime where somebody actually gets hurt, somebody where, you know, or crime in which there is an actual victim, unlike a lot of crimes, so-called crimes that the government has on the books, which don't involve victims. So what are the numbers? What is actually going down? Is it overall crime or violent crime?
Well, I mean, violence, you consider like it's having your car stolen, your package stolen, your mail stolen.
That's a crime with a victim. Yeah, that's a crime with a victim. So, yes.
So, even though that you did, they did not physically assault you.
Sure, I guess you could, you wouldn't have to call that violent crime. But how about crime with a victim?
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of crime I'm talking about.
That is.
Where,
okay.
I mean, where the person...
So why would the criminals... I mean, do you think the criminals just packed up and left town? They're like, oh my God, a Democratic mayor. We better leave. Or did they just all of a sudden have a pang of conscience because of the Democratic mayor's here, guys? You know what? Maybe we ought to stop all this raping.
Well, the thing is that we hired more officers, and now I see that...
Do you think police officers stop rape?
Well, the thing is, not really,
no.
But it helps us reduce it.
So how does it help,
you know,
if it doesn't stop it? How does it help if it doesn't stop it?
Well, I mean, let's say you're a UNIM student, you're a female, you call the emergency button.
Yeah.
If there's more officers that they hire, if they have more officers, they might come and respond and help you instead of having short, like, 100 officers.
Well, see, that's stopping rape. And you just said that they don't really do that.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is that it does help.
Well, they're not going to get there fast
enough. In what way?
No, they're not going to get there. If there's somebody who is chasing you down to try to murder or rape you, and you press an emergency button to try to alert the police that something's happening, you're going to be either dead or raped, or at the very least, you've run so far away from that location, you're not going to be there. You know, you know what I'm talking about? Like on these college campuses, they've got these little emergency booths with like the blue light on them, at least here in Keene. And you supposedly like press the thing and then people are supposed to respond. But what are you going to do exactly?
Right.
If there's some bloody murderer who's chasing you down and you have enough time to hit a button, you certainly don't have time to wait around until the dispatcher gets on the line and asks you a bunch of questions.
No, but you have enough time to whip out your gun and defend yourself.
If you are willing to break the rules on college campuses.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Wait a minute. If you're a rapist, okay, and you know that they hire 100 officers, and they might come out and catch you, instead of having like only 900, now they have 1,000, you know, that you...
Do you think rapists pay close attention to political news? Do you think that the rapists were watching the mayoral election with rapt attention? Just wondering if the Democrat's going to hire more police. We've got to pay attention to this race. We're going to get out and wave signs for the Republican just so we can rape without worry. I mean, this is just ridiculous.
Well, the criminal, to get the word out that they have bait cars, they have bait packages, that if you're lucky, now they're out to come and get you.
There's
now
some pretty cool YouTube videos with the bait bikes and the bait cars, by the way. I know you don't get on the internet, Sarah, but for listeners that do, there's some pretty entertaining stuff out there. Thank you, Sarah. Once again, this is going to get wrapped up, this topic, with the idea that correlation is not causation. So even if it's true that crime went down and there's a Democratic mayor, it's just coincidence. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. But check it out, Bait Bike. Look for that on YouTube. There's some funny stuff, man. If you like seeing criminals get what they deserve right in the moment, it's a good video. More coming.
Do you operate a retail business and are looking for a solution for point-of-sale cryptocurrency acceptance? It's never been easier thanks to AnyPay.global. There's no paperwork or approval process to open an account. If you already have a tablet at your cash register, you're almost done. Just sign up at AnyPay.global, drop your personal crypto wallet addresses in our setup page, and then load our app. That's it. You're accepting cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and Dash at your store. Get started now at AnyPay.global. That's AnyPay.global.
Hey, you can dial in toll free to join us on the radio. whatever you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And you can join us online. Go to freetalklive.com. Enjoy the features there, including our Discord server, where you can go and chat with other Free Talk Live listeners basically around the clock. I mean, I've seen people in there in the overnights, 3 a.m., 5 a.m. There's people there frequently. Yep. Talking about different things. There's different rooms in which you can have different types of conversations. There's the on-air now room, which is kind of the default room where everybody gets dumped into when they first join the server. But there's also rooms about gaming and cryptocurrency and other topics. So go to discord.lrn.fm. You can get started there. It's free, by the way, so check it out. It's fun, too. discord.lrn.fm. Beware, though, the toxic user zone. Be very, very careful. If you are afraid of, not safe for work things, then you ought to not go in there. But otherwise, most of the other rooms are pretty fun. So check that out over at discord.lrn.fm. Let's go back to the phones here to the fun, and then we'll get back into the John McAfee bot theory. Is John McAfee actually sending out on his own? Like, is he himself sitting behind a computer randomly contacting people on Facebook and sending them messages about his presidential campaign? Aria, you've dug up the actual chat log that he tried to delete, and we'll get into that here in just a moment. But first, we go to Bad Slave on the line from New Hampshire. Bad Slave, you're on our Discord lines.
Hi, I just wanted to respond to Sarah, actually. Okay. She made a claim that, there's a Democratic mayor now, and that's probably has something to do with crime going down, and we agreed, I guess, that it was all sorts of crimes, which are typically 50% victim free.
All you need to do is get police to stop fining people for having tail lights out and things like that, and voila, you made crime go down. Yeah.
Right. Well, there's another thing, too, that that could be occurring is that if it is property crimes, they could go down as a result of more patrolling, as she was claiming. But I think that the likelihood is really that the economy has been improved, maybe by the efforts of Trump, and maybe that would be actually the resulting lowering in crime.
Yeah, but wasn't the economy coming back during the Obama administration as well? So, I mean, the idea of just pinning that on Trump, I don't know if that's fair.
I mean, in Albuquerque being, a fairly poor town, I get the impression that
The whole state of New Mexico is, I think, fairly poor compared
Albuquerque
to
Albuquerque is the capital of New Mexico, though, is it not?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, it's not exactly a poor city.
Right.
But
it's not
Los
Angeles,
and they've got their poor people, and if more of them are back to work, there could be less crime for that reason. And there's definitely, since Obama, there's been an increase in employment or a decrease in unemployment.
Well, all of these things are potentially the case, but, we don't know. We don't know what it is that necessarily has caused crime to go down.
But it's a pretty safe bet. It's not the Democratic mayor.
No,
she won't go after any more detailed information. I guess the Free Talk Live is her source for that sort of thing.
Well, she listens to other radio shows, and then she kind of parrots, like, listens to NPR, and then parrots the things that she hears there when she calls other shows like ours. Batslave, thanks for the call. Thanks for the analysis tonight. I appreciate it. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. All right, so before we get back into this jobs thing, working too much, according to a New York Times editorial piece here, or opinion piece, that's just confused as to why people who she describes as young, so presumably millennials, would actually enjoy their jobs or enjoy working. We'll get back into that because we never really finished it. We started in the first hour, but also in the first hour, I think it was the last segment of the first hour, this conversation you had with John McAfee came up, and he, who is, you know, apparently running for president again, wants to get the Libertarian Party's nomination again. He didn't get it in 2016. And I think that's too bad because I think he would have been a better candidate than Gary Johnson.
Absolutely.
And you said you've soured on John McAfee now as a result of this particular conversation.
Yeah, I think anyone would if it happened to them directly.
So you're just on Facebook doing whatever you're doing on Facebook. All of a sudden, you get a message from John McAfee.
Well, sort of. I got the message at like 9 o'clock in the morning. Obviously, I wasn't awake.
Okay.
When I did become aware of it, it was like 7 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. I think it was Sunday night. I don't recall exactly. But he had used the Facebook Wave thing at me, which was weird.
Is that like they used to have poke on Facebook?
Yes, it's identical to poke.
Okay.
But for some reason, I couldn't wave back, so I just said hi. Hmm. And he said, hello, Aria. How are you doing?
Now, okay. So he sent you the wave at 9 a.m. You sent back hi later in the evening. How quickly did he get back to you after you said hi back? Do you have timestamps on the logs?
Yes. 6:51 a.m., 6:51 p.m. was when I said hi back. Mm-hmm. And 3 o'clock the next morning was when he said, hello, Aria, how are you doing?
Okay, so there was some delay. It wasn't like an instant script response because we're trying to figure out if this was an actual robot that you were talking to. All right.
I said, I'm all right, recovering from being a little sick, still recovering from being a little sick.
And you've never talked to him before in your life? This is your first
Not directly. I've liked some of his stuff and commented some of his stuff, but that's not really an interaction, I don't think. How's oceanic life?
You're asking because he's on a boat. He recently escaped from the United States, given that he believes the U.S. government's going to indict him on cryptocurrency-related charges.
Right. And I was incorrect. I chose a poor example earlier when I chose how he ended up responding through most of these messages, because to that one, he just said, it's really awesome. Mm-hmm. And then he added, thanks for your support, likes, and comments on my page.
Now, are we in real-time chat here? Is this 3 in the morning? You're on, because you're up at 3 usually, right? So
it's close to real-time. There was about a 15-minute delay here.
Okay.
After this one, real-time chat started.
Got it.
And it was weird that he thanked me for my comments on his page, because throughout the last year, none of my comments on his page have been remotely positive. I've been telling people, don't listen to anything this quack says about cryptocurrency. He's a maniac in regard to it.
So that's evidence right there that we're dealing with a script. We're dealing with him scraping his page who has liked and commented on all of my posts in the last year. Scrape that database and then send them a message.
Presumably.
Yeah.
I said, it's certainly better than cold snow in New Hampshire. Of course, I was proud to have cast my vote for you in 2016.
This was at the, were you at the convention, the Libertarian convention?
No, I voted for him in the presidential election.
Oh, you actually wrote him in?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Even though it was a futile gesture since Mississippi discards write-in votes. He said, it was futile, but still greatly appreciated. Hopefully 2020 won't be the same.
All right, so it sounds like he actually, or whoever he is, maybe it's a flunky or something like that, somebody employee that,
right.
So somebody is reading, you know, these aren't automated responses.
Automated, it's a really good bot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I said, I was never sure at any point during this whether I was interacting with a human being or with a bot.
Right.
But then he goes, have you checked out my official campaign website as well? He gave me the links to it.
Okay.
I said, I haven't, but I'll check it out later.
Yeah.
He said, all right, then, thanks. He goes on to say, I haven't posted on my Facebook page in a while. Thought to have this created and appreciate my followers for their support, likes, and comments on the page. And also to inform about my new crypto project. So here...
Wait, what was thoughts to have this created? What was that line? I didn't hear you say it right.
Oh, no, I said it right. Haven't posted on the Facebook page in a while. Thought to have this created and appreciate my followers for their support, likes, and comments on the page.
Thought to have this created and appreciate my supporters for their likes and comments. Yeah. It almost sounds like he's admitting he's created some sort of thing that you're interacting with. I'm not sure what that means. What does that mean? Thoughts or thought to have this created?
I thought to have created this. I don't know what this is.
This but. Meaning the whoever or thing that
I gotta
you're
say
responding
the speech
to.
Patterns do sound a lot like McAfee.
This is Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us here. Take control of the airwaves and bring up whatever you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And thanks to Richard Thompson, who is a Free Talk Live gold amplifier, meaning that Richard contributes $10 a month to the Free Talk Live AMP program. AMP stands for Advertise, Market, and Promote. It's for listeners like you, hopefully, that actually value what we do. If you appreciate the fact that we're on the air talking about freedom and cryptocurrency and peace on a 7-night-a-week basis on the radio across the United States and internationally via satellite and online, of course, if you like the fact that we're doing all that, and we do it all for free, meaning that you can download as much as you want, you can watch as much as you want, you can, you know, enjoy the website for free. If you appreciate it and you want to help us out, then do what Richard did and contribute. He's doing gold, which means he's doing 10 bucks a month. All we ask for is $5 a month, and you can do that over at amp.freetalklive.com. AMP stands for Advertise, Market, and Promote. AMP, amp.freetalklive.com. You can sign up with PayPal. You can use credit card. You can use Bitcoin BTC, and we sure do appreciate it. We'll give you some extra perks and some bonuses, like if you're in the Discord chat, you'll get the gold color to your name, and you'll have access to the supporters chat rooms there. There's also the AMP Only podcast. There's a Facebook group for those of you who are still on Facebook. So go to amp.freetalklive.com to get signed up. That's amp.freetalklive.com. In fact, we're talking about an interaction that you had, Aria, with John McAfee, or with something purporting to be John McAfee. We're not clear whether it's a script or maybe some, you know, somebody he hired on Fiverr or one of his associates that he is living with right now that is doing this. Because, you know, John McAfee is a fairly wealthy guy. I mean, that's at the very least the way he portrays himself. I believe it. He's been very successful in life. He's in his mid-70s. I think he's like 73 or 74 years old. And he is a successful software entrepreneur. And we've seen that he has been on his own Twitter account basically hoeing himself out to cryptocurrency companies, saying that he'll take whatever crypto, as crappy as it is, and he'll shill for it for like $100,000, basically.
Yeah.
So for $100,000... he could take 20,000 of that 100,000 and hire some kid, you know, to pay a kid full time, which is not bad. Like, if you're going to live down in you know, somewhere that's not the United States, maybe he's not living with John McAfee. Maybe he's living in, you know, India or whatever. John McAfee's on a boat right now in international waters. I think he's down in Georgetown on some island. But anyway, if you're living not in the U.S., I mean, 20 grand isn't bad to just sit there and send messages to somebody on Facebook and, you know, be John McAfee. So from what you've read so far with this conversation, which just started out of the middle of nowhere, you got a message from John McAfee at 9 a.m. You responded later that evening. He gets back to you at 3 a.m., and that's where this conversation kind of continues, where he's promoting to you his presidential campaign. He's acknowledged some of the things that you've said, so it's not like it's just a straight boring script that is, you know, only asking the same questions or saying the same things to everybody. He's saying things that are unique to what it is that you've said to him. So that suggests to me that it's probably not an actual robot and that it's probably an actual person. But whether or not it's actually John McAfee is another question. So was there more that you wanted to share from y'all's conversation?
Sure. There was a little bit more.
So he shills for his website for his campaign.
Yeah, which is understandable.
Sure. Yeah, he's running for president. You gotta put it out there.
So I asked, what's the new crypto project? Would you be interested in coming on our show to discuss it?
So he mentioned he had a new crypto project. Is that why you asked that,
yes,
that question? Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, we ended off with him saying, and also to inform about my new crypto project.
I see.
To which he said, and this is the part where I was like, okay, this is probably a bot. Mm-hmm. But in looking at it more, I'm thinking this is probably some kid from the Philippines who just doesn't speak English as a first language. He replied, I would love to come to the radio show, but I'm tied with the project. My McAfee crypto team have developed a platform to enable crypto enthusiasts make profits off their coins in this bearish market.
See, now, part of the problem is McAfee's frequently drunk. So, you know, the language here sounds like it's somebody who maybe doesn't know English real, real well, or somebody who's just too drunk to care. So it's possible that it is a drunken McAfee who maybe he's into trannies or whatever, and he just saw you and like maybe that's why.
Well,
we've
we
never
know
heard.
He's at least gone to dinner with at least one.
Has he?
Yeah.
Who's that?
I don't know her name. Okay. He didn't know she was trans at the time.
All right.
So we had a little bit of conversation about crypto, but I asked, sounds interesting, but how does it grow the investment? Relative to the USD or by increasing the amount of crypto held?
This is about whatever thing he's promoting.
Right.
You're not mentioning for obvious reasons.
Yeah. People have different ideas of what they want from their investment. I would rather get more crypto, even if my relative values to the USD never actually changes.
Okay.
Because in the long run, that more crypto is more beneficial to me than having more USD now.
Okay.
So he answers, on the trading section, you are allowed the privilege to pick amongst one of our competent day traders to handle your trade, where you can monitor their per hour trades in real time and make withdrawals if need be.
So he's selling you a day trader service where somebody else will do the trading for you, is the idea?
Yes.
Okay.
So I said, okay, but are they aiming to increase the Ethereum and Bitcoin that are held, which are the two currencies he mentioned, or are they aiming to procure it and wait on crypto value increases, which is essentially what Helium did in conjunction with Uphold.
And that didn't work out
real well. No, it didn't. Okay. He says, our crypto brokers trade on several platforms simultaneously while your funds are held in your Stratton account. They trade with company funds representing the amount you have in your account. I said, can you answer the question, please? He says, the Bitcoin and Ethereum are being traded with and mined, so they aren't just held till the crypto value increases. He took what I said in the most literal terms. I don't care if those particular Bitcoins are the ones being held or if you spend that 0.01 and then you return 0.01. That's not what I was asking. And I think McAfee would have known that.
Okay.
So I asked again, what's increasing though? Like, I day traded for a while between Litecoin, Ethereum, and Blackcoin. Although I lost money relative to the USD, in the course of 4 months, I gained an entire Litecoin out of it by shape-shifting prior to their implementation of KYC into whichever had the best...
Know your customer. Yep.
Into whichever had the best ratio to whichever I was holding at the time. On that note, what is the status of KYC with regard to this service? You are unable to reply to this conversation.
What a strange point at which to just pull the plug and disconnect.
When I began asking questions about it.
About legality, too. I mean, that's, you know, KYC is a government usually mandated process.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I don't know, right?
You're still flummoxed by this.
Whatever it was, whether it was McAfee using a bot or some person whose first language is not English, or it was just a drunk McAfee, that is improper behavior. That is not someone for whom I will vote for president.
Right, to just pull the plug in the middle of a conversation with somebody that you were trying to pitch something to.
Yeah. I mean, that's so shady. It's like, hey, I've got this car to sell you. And then when they start asking questions about it, you're like, okay, never mind.
Nope.
We're not doing this.
Yeah.
And that's shady.
Yeah, that's too bad because he is a character. He's entertaining as hell. And I wonder if that, it just doesn't seem, I mean, I don't know him well enough, right? Like, I've run into him at a couple of different crypto events. We've had him on as an interviewee here on Free Talk Live, but you don't get to know somebody when you're talking to them briefly at a trade show or whatever. So it's hard to say. I mean, you don't get to, generally in life, you don't get to a level of success by ripping a bunch of people off. I mean, it's not always true. It's true for politicians that they do rip people off and they manage to be successful. So, I mean, there are some exceptions to that rule. But, I mean, generally, if you've been successful in business, it's usually because you honored your agreements. It's usually because you did what you said you were going to do, not because you've just been ripping people off left and right, because then the word gets around.
Yeah, you know? And how much longer is his name going to be worth $100,000 for a tweet, you know?
I don't know. He may not be alive much longer.
True.
I mean, he's old. He's a man in his mid-70s. And
he doesn't look it, though, to be fair. I mean, I would peg him probably for 56.
Really?
Yeah.
No, he doesn't look that young. He's pretty old.
Well, he may be using old pictures of himself online. I don't know.
Could be.
Well, I mean, there's that video he did recently when he was on the boat, so.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it.
What do you think, Johnson? Do you think that she was dealing with a robot? That she was dealing with some kid in a boiler room?
I go, boiler room kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It definitely seems like somebody who doesn't have a total grasp on the English language, and it seems unbelievable that McAfee, as wealthy and as busy as he purportedly is just hammering out Facebook messages to random people who liked his page.
Well, my assumption was that he wanted me to be one of his people out on the ground campaigning for him.
The question is the boiler room literally a boiler room on the ship?
Good question. If you want to jump in, comment. Well, maybe there are people out there who received a similar question. Did you post about this at all publicly? Did you say, hey, did anybody else get a message from McAfee? Because that would be an indicator, right?
Not publicly, I don't think. Not on Facebook anyway. I mentioned it on the show.
See, that would be interesting to see if you could put it out there and say, hey, did anybody else? Because you probably already know people who are connected with this page who've liked some stuff. Did anybody else get these messages? Or was it just you? More coming up here in moments. This is Free Talk.
You want to know the 37 items you must have to survive a crisis? Then I've got some good news for you. Former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author Jason Hansen is now giving listeners a free copy of his book, The Escape Bag Blueprint, 37 Items You Must Have to Survive a Crisis. You can claim your copy at freeescapebook.com. Don't delay. Jason reveals the guns, knives, flashlights, and water filters that could save your life in an economic collapse or grid down event. Get your free book today, freeescapebook.com. FreeEscapeBook.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. We're launching into the third hour. You can bring up whatever you want. We're going to rejoin our conversation that we had in the first hour of the show about working, because there's a lady over at the New York Times that just doesn't understand. She doesn't understand why people who are her age, she says younger people, why are young people pretending to love work, she asks in her opinion piece. We're going to continue with that. With you tonight, though, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Aria.
We want to invite you to dial in to join us here. The toll-free number, if you want to do that, is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Normally, our call screening process is pretty light, pretty easy. It's usually, what's your name? What do you want to call about? You know, what are you calling about? Where are you calling from? We have added an extra step due to being inundated in recent weeks by callers who appear to just want to get on the air and say things they're not supposed to say on the radio, which is basically a waste of everyone's time when that happens. Yeah, we have a dump button here, and we can dump your call out, and you'll never actually make it on the air with, you know, the things that you thought you were going to be able to say on the radio that you're not allowed to say. So we have the technology to handle that. I just would prefer not to use it because it's still a waste of time. Like, we had to get to the point of hearing whatever garbage it is that's going to come out of that caller's mouth, and then we had to then press the button to drop that out, and then we have to wait until we can take the next call because the dump machine has to build its dump back up again so we can use it again if somebody else calls with that stuff. So we are implementing an extra call screening step. We're going to require your phone number so we can call you back, because then we know, you know, we've got an actual verifiable number for you at that point, and you're not just some rando calling in. It's less likely that people who are going to say the F word on the radio or something like that are going to want to give out their phone number. So if you don't give out your number for a simple callback verification, you're not going to get on the air with us here tonight, just so you know. So the toll-free number for you to call us is 855-450-FREE, and sure enough, that person just dropped off the line. So there you go. Look, if you want to call in and say the F word or say something offensive, we do have an after show that we do. I think we're probably going to do it maybe Wednesday night this week. So you can join us then. It's called Freer Talk Live. It's on Twitch only. It's only available on Twitch, which is an internet streaming platform. So we're not on any radio stations. So if you just want to say the F word on the air, you can do it on our Twitch after show. And we will not screen anybody. We won't ask for any phone numbers or anything like that at that time. But during this show, we have to keep our radio station safe. And so anyway, just figured I'd explain that for those of you who've been calling in tonight and you know, have been trying to do that. And you've been unsuccessful at it tonight. So there. All right. Back to the story here, guys. We were talking about working. And this article from the New York Times with a woman who is just bewildered. Her name's Erin Griffith. She just can't understand what's with this workaholism. And then she gets into more of her opinions here about it after citing Elon Musk, suggesting that people ought to work 80 hours per week if they really want to make a difference. He says nobody ever changed the world on 40 hours per week, suggesting that that's the bare minimum, that 40 is a bare minimum. And I think that, you know, from an entrepreneur's perspective, that's the truth. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, if you are doing your own thing, you're putting in way more than 40 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not getting paid. If you're a job worker, then if you're getting a salary, it doesn't matter how many hours you put in. And if you're getting salary, you've got to put in whatever hours you need to put in to make sure that the work gets done and that further you're outstanding, right? Because you don't want to do the bare minimum, because if you're doing the bare minimum, you might get your job cut. You might be like, well, this person or the boss or consultant or whoever it is that comes in there might say, oh, well, this person is obviously not excited about being here. They're doing the least amount of work. They're being the least productive. So there is something to be said for enjoying what you do and putting a little bit more time in than average. You don't want to be the average employee, right? If you're going to be an employee, which again, I don't recommend, but in the world that we're in, it seems like the safe road for people. Because when you're an employee, you're getting a paycheck every week. It seems like something that you can count on. Now, of course, anybody who's been fired knows you can't count on a paycheck every week. It's nice that it's there, but it might not be there next week. Like, talk to the people from Huffington Post.
Or the federal government.
Exactly. So Musk, who has more than, just back to the story here, has more than 24 million Twitter followers, further noted that if you love what you do, quote, it mostly, he puts that in parentheses, doesn't feel like work. She says even he had to soften the lie of TGIM with a parenthetical. And it's definitely true. I would say it's not false. It does feel it's fun. If what you're doing is something you enjoy, then it's not the same as the grind. You know, it's not the same as some sort of thing that you want to be as far away from as you possibly can. That feels more like work.
Sure. I mean, there were days of doing radio that was like 8 hours, 9 hours at a stretch.
And then
I was back here 12 hours. It didn't feel like work.
Exactly. Arguably, the technology industry started this culture of work zeal sometime around the turn of the millennium, when the likes of Google started to feed, massage, and even play doctor to its employees. Does anybody buy that? The idea that people were only excited to go to work after Google started giving them lunch and, you know, Benny's, you know, the little arcade games that you can play in the break room and things like that. The idea that work wasn't fun for people before that?
I think it depends on the job and the person.
Right. People have always enjoyed working. That's just a kind of a human thing.
Well, the idea that work can be fun may or may not be a new one, but the idea of working 60 hours a week and things like that certainly goes well beyond Google.
Way back. Yeah. So I think that this person who's writing this article only associates fun at work with things that have traditionally, in her mind, been considered fun. Oh, well, now I can play an arcade game on break, or, you know, I can go into the cafeteria and have a chef, you know, make me an omelet or whatever it is that they get at these, you know, big campuses with Facebook and Google and all that. Oh, there's the ball pit. We can go jump in the ball pit or whatever it is. I don't know what they have. This kind of stuff. That she only associates things that aren't work-like with something that's enjoyable. So that's why she thinks it all started at the turn of the century. There was never anything enjoyable about work before the ball pit showed up. She goes on. She says the perks were...
This is a positive development, that work has become more enjoyable. How is that not a good thing?
She says the perks were meant to help companies attract the best talent and keep employees at their desks longer. It seemed enviable enough. Who wouldn't want an employer that literally took care of your dirty laundry? But today, as tech culture infiltrates every corner of the business world, its hymns to the virtues of relentless work remind me of nothing so much as Soviet-era propaganda, which promote impossible-seeming feats of worker productivity to motivate the labor force.
Can we scroll back up to the image she used for this article?
Yeah, she has an image that looks very Soviet. It's of some millennial-looking people looking off into the upper, you know, horizon in the distance, holding on to their laptops and their tablets and phones, and they've got clenched fists as well.
Okay, so she's anti-capitalist, but she's also anti-socialist?
She says one obvious difference, of course, is that those Stakhanovite posters had an anti-capitalist bent, criticizing the fat cats profiting from free enterprise. Today's messages glorify personal profit, even if bosses and investors, not workers, are the ones capturing most of the gains. Wage growth has been essentially stagnant for years. Now, if she wants to criticize the job world, I'm on board. Okay, I'm on board with criticizing working at a job because, yeah, you are benefiting the owner. That's the whole point. The owner is rewarding you concomitant to your value, to what it is that you can create for that owner. If you are a crappy employee, you're not going to get paid as well as somebody who does a better job than you because the owner wants to make more money. And so the owner wants to have the best employees who do the best work at the lowest price, but still understands he still has to pay more than his competitors in order to retain the services of the best employees.
Well, that's why they don't like capitalism. It requires you to serve your fellow human beings, and they don't want to do that.
Well,
they want their fellow human beings to serve them.
Well, or they want robots or whatever it is that they want. But yeah, they want to be able to do nothing, and they want to be able to enjoy all the ball pits and the video games and whatever it is they want to enjoy without having any other responsibilities. These are the lazy class. These are the people who would sign up for welfare if it were available to them, and they just want to live off the largesse of others. But we got more here on the story. She's got a few more critiques. And your calls and thoughts are also welcome. Our toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You can take control of the airwaves. Bring up what you want. This is Free Talk Live. And oh yeah, don't forget we've got the Discord server over at discord.lrn.fm. It's Free Talk Live. You may join us here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. And you can join us in real life in Anarchapulco coming up in just a couple weeks from now. It starts February 14th through the 17th in beautiful Acapulco, Mexico, and the sun and beaches of a world-class resort. You'll see an amazing lineup of speakers, including Ron Paul and Judge Napolitano, and dozens more. You can go to anarchapulco.com and use code FTL to get registered at a discount, and Free Talk Live will be broadcasting from the event. So we'll look forward to seeing you, and you'll see some great speeches discussing entrepreneurship, investments, politics, philosophy, health, sustainability, lifestyles, and personal relationships. Again, it's a four-day-long event. And it's was great the last 2 years. I've been there, and I'm looking forward to going back. February 14th through the 17th, anarchapulco.com, code FTL. We'll talk more about working and workaholism. Is it necessarily a bad thing to love work? I would say not at all. In fact, I think it's a great thing to love work because work gives us, you know, to some extent, it gives us some meaning in life. It allows us to, as you were talking about, Aria, serve others. To give people, whether it be your customers or your boss, you know, what it is that they want, and then you, in response, are rewarded for that. Now, the author here is saying at the New York Times that she thinks it's gone even further and that it's a bad thing and that people that are rewarded by work are somehow wrong, that there's something bizarre about that. She doesn't really understand. So we'll continue that. But first, we go to George on the line in Georgia. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, George. Hello, George in Georgia. Going once. George in Georgia. Going twice.
Hello. Hello.
You're on the air.
Hello. Hello. I would like to know how many zombie vultures that you have to skin to make hobo soup.
Now, this is an interesting question. How many zombie vultures you have to skin to make hobo soup? Why would it be called hobo soup if it was made out of zombie vultures?
Because you have to eat it as a hobo. It's for the hobos.
Where are they going to get zombie vultures?
From the zombie vultures that fly in the sky and kill you.
You know, you didn't have to lie and say you were going to call about Donald Trump to get on the air. I mean, if you had just said you wanted to talk about zombie vultures, I'd have put you on the air anyway.
I call and talk to my friend, where my good friend Johnson, where he has the answer to this very eponymous question.
I'm trying to figure out who this is, actually.
You actually think this is somebody you know?
Yes, I know it's somebody I know, but I don't know.
How do you know it's somebody you know?
I know it's somebody I know because it's my game of the week that I've been
zombie
playing
vultures?
Recently. Zombie vultures are...
That's a game?
They're part of a game called 7 Days to Die. Which is a zombie crafting horde survival game.
Oh, okay. Zombie crafting.
Well, it's a crafting horde survival game that features zombies, and one of the zombie creatures is Vulture. There's a zombie.
So you, the player, are crafting weapons to fight off the
Correct.
Zombie hordes?
It's like Minecraft meets Left 4 Dead.
Okay. And you like these zombie games. You've been playing the Left 4 Dead games, right?
It makes me sad that my friend doesn't recognize my voice. this is a vote by a tribunal, and I was the one that decided to call in, and because nobody's Johnson needs more crap.
Now, are you an actual friend, or are you just like an online friend? Are you somebody?
I believe this is my Floridian friend.
Okay, like, did you know him when you lived in Florida?
No.
Okay, so you guys are online friends.
It's Mike.
Oh, okay. It's my Wisconsinian friend.
All right.
that took a lot of work. I had to pretend I was talking like Donald Trump, like the whole like jowls and stuff. Like
you sounded like Dave.
Dave who?
Did I? Our buddy Dave. I haven't called into the show in years.
These are okay. So there's a group of libertarian gamers who have all listened to Free Talk Live and you know been to several libertarian events for many years, and so we all play online every so often. So yes,
right on.
There are liberty gamers out there.
Yeah, I haven't called into the show in years, and I just figured. While alternate reality Taryn is playing, he's playing a game right now with a friend of ours. I was like, well, let me step out and take one for the team and call and give Johnson some crap.
Yeah, so I should say that the group was originally kind of organized by a former host of this show, has been on a few times, I would say, Taryn Lupo.
Oh yeah. So, is he still in New Hampshire?
He is still in New Hampshire. Okay. He's up.
Is he still married?
He's up in the woods up there.
Is he still with the girlfriend?
Yeah,
slash
he's still
wife?
With the girlfriend.
Okay.
Yep. And So I
also just wanted to, you know, as I was trying to figure out a way to troll Johnson constructively, it's really hard to find a phone number to call on your show.
Really?
And
it's right on the video feed and on the website.
You could actually call through Discord as well.
Yeah, you can.
but that would have been too easy for you, dude.
Oh, yeah,
and so
true.
I mean, how hard is it to find the phone number? I don't know, man. Really?
It took me 15 minutes. Believe it or not, like it took a lot of work.
Oh yeah, you're right. You know what? We used to have it at the top of the site. I don't know why it's not there anymore.
Yeah, so you might want to take a look at that. I think that's the one constructive thing I might call in as a result. Is, you know, like you made it so hard for me to troll somebody.
You know, if you're actually listening to the show, I give out the number every 10 minutes.
It's been a couple years, man. It's been a couple years, but I still love what you guys are out there doing. All right. And I just keep up the great work.
Well, thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank God you weren't actually calling about Donald Trump. I appreciate the call.
Thank God.
Thanks, dude. All right, so the toll free. You don't have to lie, okay? If you want to do a troll call, if you want to have a little bit of fun, that's fine with me. Like, first of all, we didn't have any other calls on the line. Otherwise, we would be taking them. But if we'd had like three calls on hold and two of them wanted to talk about Donald Trump and you called in and said zombie vultures, you're going to the front of the line. I want to talk about zombie vultures. That's way more interesting to me than a politician, even though Trump is more entertaining than the average politician.
I should add that creating hobo stew requires 10 rotting flesh, 2 potatoes, 2 ears of corn, and a bottle of water.
So no zombie vultures required.
Well, you need 10 rotting flesh, which I assume
so any
you're
rotting
strip
flesh
off of. You know, you, any
from
rotting
anything.
Flesh. No zombie vultures.
Are there also zombie cats, dogs? I mean, what other zombies?
There are zombie wolves, dogs, snakes, several types of different human type zombie police.
Of course.
They vomit bile at you.
Lovely.
There are, I'm trying to think of the other.
Now, is this like a tower defense kind of horde game, or like, how are you?
It's not really tower defense. It's, you know, mm-hmm. it's first person. So it's
first person. Okay.
Yeah, it's first person.
What's it called?
It's called 7 Days to Die. It's actually an alpha game. It's actually gotten.
Do you have to pay for it?
Yes.
This makes me so angry.
I'm with you on
There's
that.
There's not a lot that makes me upset, but the idea of paying to be in an alpha is so frustrating.
And there are
me.
A lot of people who have reviewed it that have given it horrible reviews.
It's an alpha!
yeah, it's an alpha. But as of Alpha 17, it has improved dramatically, and it is. I enjoy it a lot.
So it's the 17th version of the alpha?
I guess.
The only alpha I would play is Dwarf Fortress.
And it's Troll Fortress?
Dwarf Fortress. Yeah, and it's because it's been in development for like 15 years. It's a massive.
And it's still in alpha?
Yeah, it's never going to leave alpha. Just like Minecraft was in beta for like 8 years.
I don't get it. I don't. What happened to games?
Dwarf Fortress is free.
Okay. So that's not bad, right? Like, that doesn't offend me at all.
Well, I mean, I would say 7 Days to Die is very inexpensive for the type of game that it is.
What are we talking about here? $5?
I got 2 copies for 14, so, yeah. But that was during a sale, so.
You are old enough to remember back when games were free, there was something called freeware.
But I'm also old enough to remember that if you get a Rockstar game, you're going to be paying $60 to $80 to $100.
That's true. There's more coming up here in moments. It's Free Talk Live.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Worden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing, too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Worden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
Hey, it's Free Talk Live. You dial toll-free here. Bring up whatever you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've also got the Discord on-air call-in line rooms over at discord.lrn.fm. Ian Johnson and Aria in the studio here tonight. And, of course, we invite you to the website. All the features there are completely free, so please enjoy those, including our podcast feeds. You can go to feeds.freetalklive.com, sign up for the podcast via whatever receiving program you prefer. You got iTunes, you got whatever the other ones are. They're all there. You can sign up over at feeds.freetalklive.com. And by sign up, I mean you use whatever link you want and put it into your podcast client of preference, and then you'll receive our episodes as they are released. You can do full show. There's a podcast for the full show. There's a podcast for just the digest if you're time challenged and you only have 20 or 30 minutes a day and you want to get kind of a summary of what we talked about. The good gentleman in Utah, Riley Blake, has been editing our digest for a couple years now, I think. So it does great work. Thank you for doing that. And he basically boils down our 2-hour-long podcast into a 20 to 30 minute daily digest. So you can decide, or you can get our full feed, which has all of the above in it, over at feeds.freetalklive.com. We'll talk more about the working culture that this author at the New York Times seems to believe didn't exist before the turn of the century, that nobody really liked working until they could go and play an arcade game or a pinball game during their break at Google or something like that, which is just strange. It's a strange attitude. But we'll continue with that coming up here in moments. Let's go first to David in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live, David.
Hey, I think it's worth people knowing that another hypocrite judge got arrested.
Really?
Probably won't get any jail time.
For what?
Excuse me, yeah. For DWI and causing an accident.
Where?
So the chick is in Albuquerque, and so she's rolling down the street on her way home to the little rich neighborhood and down by the river in Albuquerque. She makes a U-turn and doesn't properly clear the area, and she causes another car to, I don't know if they hit or she just caused the car to go off the road, caused an accident.
Ooh,
and it's worth noting, this woman is a judge, and so it's appropriate to state her name, Deborah Walker, Judge Walker, a.k.a. Deborah Davis Walker. And it's worth noting that she is a family court judge. And so this family, she didn't happen to be my judge. My judge was, in that case, was Jewel, Angela Jewel. But I didn't have her. But this woman's been on the bench for 20 years.
Wow.
And family court judges, they do a lot of protecting children from, for instance, from bad parents. They protect
like drunks,
children.
Like drunk parents.
Exactly. Yeah. Like some parent that might be out drunk driving and cause an accident, and maybe there was a child in the car that she caused to crash. Maybe that child got hurt. So the cop comes up and does the field sobriety. She doesn't do well on field sobriety. She blows in the breathalyzer. She's over the legal limit blown in the breathalyzer.
You know, she pulled out do you know who I am card.
Well, I would like to see a lapel video
from
that one. Hopefully there is some. And also, when the cop asked her, "Have you had anything to drink?" this, I think it's FCC legal, but I keep resisting saying the B word because this B word, she says, no, I haven't had anything to drink. She denied having something to drink when she failed field sobriety and she failed the breathalyzer. And no, officer, I haven't had anything to drink.
Wow.
So there she is, a judge lying to a cop. You know, Deborah Davis Walker in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Well, maybe she figured since cops lie to her lie in court all the time, she can get away with it there on the side of the road. David, thanks for the call tonight. Great story. I appreciate that. You know, it's interesting when these things happen because it reminds people who are paying attention that these are not your betters.
No, they're not.
That these people wearing robes and uniforms and acting like they are, whoa, I'm the judge. I stand up taller than everyone else. I'm on a riser. I've got men and women who will do everything I say. I'm in charge. And that's because the suggestion is they're somehow better, right? They're called honorable. Your honor. That's like worshipful, right? Yeah. That these people are better human beings.
Interesting. A Google search is not revealing any news about this yet.
It may be
only
breaking
on local news.
Yeah. So, David, great call. Thanks for sharing that tonight. These are not your betters. These are not better people. They have the same problems as everybody else. They've got drinking problems. They've got family problems. They've got fights with their spouse. They've got whatever it is, depression. They've got all the same problems that everybody else has. It's just they get to take it out on you. They get to take out whatever frustrations they have on other innocent lives who come in front of their courtrooms. And so whenever stuff like this happens, it's important to, let people know that to remind them that these are just human beings. They're not perfect. They're not better than you are. It's just they work for the government. So they get to use the coercive force against you and extract wealth and obedience from you. And some of them probably get off on it.
If not all of them.
Indeed. So thanks for sharing that, David. Let's get back to the story here from the New York Times on this opinion, this ridiculous opinion piece here about working. She says, perhaps we've all gotten a little hungry for meaning. Participation in organized religion is falling, especially among American millennials. In San Francisco, where I live, surprise, I've noted that the concept of productivity has taken on an almost spiritual dimension. Techies here have internalized the idea, rooted in the Protestant work ethic, that work is not something you do to get what you want. The work itself is all. Therefore, any life hack or company perk that optimizes their day, allowing them to fit in even more work, is not just desirable but inherently good. Agent Harper, who created a European work week shrinkage campaign called 4-Day Week, argues this is dehumanizing and toxic. He says, quote, it creates the assumption that the only value we have as human beings is our productivity capability, our ability to work, rather than our humanity.
I mean, that's literally true, though.
What do you mean?
We are valued by our productivity. Our value is derived from our productivity. That is literally true. That is literally what productivity and value literally mean.
I see what you're saying.
I want to be loved because I'm a human being. No one cares.
Do you think
that's not the way the world works?
Do you think when they did the layoffs at BuzzFeed and Huffington Post that they did it all by a randomized lottery because we can't possibly have those companies being a meritocracy?
No,
right?
They targeted the people who weren't valuable, right? That they
targeted they can't do that. That would mean that they value merit, and how are they judging merit? How are they discriminating against these people who might be less fortunate?
Yeah.
Clearly, those people are the ones that need the most support, and therefore, we must have a random lottery to run a company. That's a successful way to run a business, is to make sure that it's completely fair.
It's a great point, but right? So one of the things she's pointing out here is that. She says the only value we have as human beings is our productivity capability. And that's a cold way of assessing things. And you're agreeing with it, Arya. Maybe she's thinking of outside of productivity, like creating artwork. There's value to that, right? But maybe she doesn't consider that productive. Maybe she considers that artistic, right? But you would say that that is productive because if people value the art, they're going to buy it.
Well, even if they don't value it, it's a productive use of one's time.
But if it doesn't produce value in others, then is it productive? Like, if you go out and you...
I think in the most literal sense, it probably would be considered productive.
But if you go out and you... The classic example, if you dig a hole where no one asked you to dig a hole, and then you fill it back in, you've been working all day, right? Like, you've been digging this hole and filling it back in all day. Have you actually produced anything?
No. No. Certainly not. I mean, you just killed some time.
Right.
But, I mean, the artwork that nobody wanted, like Van Gogh, for example, and nobody wanted his artwork.
Until
much later. But, I mean, he was certainly productive.
It's cultist, Mr. Harper added, to convince workers to buy into their own exploitation with a change the world message. He says, it's creating the idea that Elon Musk is your high priest. You're going into your church every day and worshiping at the altar of work. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. You can bring up what you want. We'll talk about working. Is this lady on to something? It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. Moments remain. Enough time for you. If you want to dial in now, our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live is brought to you by the AMP program. Free Talk Live listeners becoming amplifiers over at amp.freetalklive.com, like Kingston Smith, who's a Free Talk Live Gold amplifier, meaning Kingston gives $10 a month to the AMP program to help us advertise, market, and promote Free Talk Live. And you can do that too over at amp.freetalklive.com, ampamp.freetalklive.com. For congregants of the Cathedral of Perpetual Hustle, this lady over at the New York Times is likening the love of work to a religious viewpoint, to a religious belief. She says, spending time on anything that's non-work related has become a reason to feel guilty. Jonathan Crawford, a San Francisco-based entrepreneur, told me that he sacrificed his relationships and gained more than 40 pounds while working on Store Envy, his e-commerce startup. If he socialized, it was at a networking event. If he read, it was a business book. He rarely did anything that didn't have a direct ROI, as he puts it, or return on investment for his company. Mr. Crawford changed his lifestyle after he realized it made him miserable. Now, as an entrepreneur in residence, I don't know what that means, at 500 Startups, an investment firm, he tells fellow founders to seek out non-work-related activities like reading fiction, watching movies, or playing games. Somehow, this comes off as radical advice. He says it's oddly eye-opening to them because they didn't realize they saw themselves as a resource to be expended. It's easy to become addicted to the pace and stress of work in 2019. Bernie Klinder, a consultant for a large tech company, said he tried to limit himself to 5 11-hour days per week, which adds up to an extra day of productivity. In an email, he wrote, quote, if your peers are competitive, working a normal work week will make you look like a slacker. Still, he's realistic about his place in the rat race, saying, quote, I try to keep in mind that if I dropped dead tomorrow, all of my acrylic workplace awards would be in the trash the next day, and my job would be posted in the paper before my obituary. See, it's all meaningless, Arya.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you mean, absolutely? Is it pointless? So you're completely replaceable, so why bother?
Personal fulfillment is the reason to bother. I mean, of course it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter. Even if you're Donald Trump, even if you're Elon Musk, it's not going to matter. You're going to rot in the ground, forgotten, just like everybody else. I'm sorry to break that to them. They may be remembered for a little while longer, but give it 500 years, give it 1,000 years, and nobody's going to remember, nobody's going to care.
I mean, the fair thing here is that they're working for other people. If you want to be working for, you know, I guess if you're making a lot of money at it, sure. But are you saving that money? What are you doing with that? You know, what's the motivation for the working those hours? If you're working those hours because you feel like you're, you know, I don't know, building someone else's dream, that's idiotic.
Yeah, and that could be depressive at some point. I mean, that's why I can relate to some extent with the critiques about the job world to what she's saying. I can get that.
You know, if you're working, you know, 60, 80 hour weeks just to make ends meet, and you're not trying to figure a way out of that situation,
that's the rat race.
You're a moron.
That's the rat race.
Right.
She's using the term rat race in here a couple of times, and I don't think that it's the rat race when you're doing your own thing.
Right.
It's the rat race when you described where you're slaving away, working primarily to benefit someone else, meaning the boss or the owner, and barely making ends meet. You are, by definition, in the rat race at that point.
And
the
if way you can't you figure out how to increase your income, then you're just a dummy at that point.
Right. And, of course, it's good to have multiple sources of income in case you get fired.
Right. But you can't do that if you're working 80 hours a week, you know, slaving away for someone else, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to get out of the rat race, you have to do something for you.
Right.
You have to figure out what that is. Now, that's the challenge is, you know, what is your calling? What is it that you would love to do? What is it that you love to do that you could somehow turn into a monetary benefit? I'm not saying there's an easy answer to that question, but it might be there. It's just maybe you've never felt like you could go for it. Maybe you're too scared about it. I mean, a lot of people don't want to make that jump into the void of, like, you know, completely quitting their job and going full time with whatever their dream is. That's
if you're working
80
hours a week, you can't. Would hope that you're
can't afford to. Yeah.
I would hope that if you're working 8 hours a week, you're making enough income that you can be putting money aside so that you can afford to.
Right.
You know, make the investment eventually. You know, you save up enough money to not work for a year and then you make that jump, but you're not working. You're investing into your own business, your own project.
That's the point of all that work.
Possibly survive.
The point of all that work is to benefit you in the long run by allowing you to break away and do the thing you really want to do, to get out of the rat race. But as you're saying, if they don't have a plan, if they're just working for the sake of working to keep busy, I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with doing that, but it's not going to get you anywhere. It's just going to get you reliant on the boss.
Right.
A little bit more here from the story. The logical endpoint of excessively avid work, of course, is burnout. That is the subject of a recent viral essay by the BuzzFeed cultural critic Ann Peterson, which thoughtfully addresses one of the incongruities of hustle mania in the young. Namely, if millennials are supposedly lazy and entitled, how can they also be obsessed with killing it at their jobs? Here's a hint. Not all millennials are the same. How about we talk about people as individuals? Because if it's true that millennials are lazy, as this author seems to be, because she doesn't really get working, it seems like, that doesn't mean everybody else is like you. I know it's kind of like people believe the world revolves around them. Like,
either that or that this author absolutely does get working and also understands how to write clickbait, which is why she's had successive jobs as a senior writer for many very famous publications.
Maybe so. Millennials, Ms. Peterson argues, are just desperately striving to meet their own high expectations. An entire generation was raised to expect that good grades and extracurricular achievement, or overachievement, she says, would reward them with fulfilling jobs that feed their passions. Instead, they wound up with precarious, meaningless work and a mountain of student loan debt. And so, posing as a rise and grinder, lusty for Monday mornings, starts to make sense as a defense mechanism. Again, suggesting that it's all fake, that nobody in her generation could possibly actually enjoy working. She says most jobs, even most good jobs, are full of pointless drudgery. And you got an article about that, Johnson, apparently. Mm. These pointless jobs. We'll hopefully get into that another time. Most corporations let us down in some way. And yet years after the HBO satire Silicon Valley, great show, by the way, made the vacuous mission statement of making the world a better place, a recurring punchline, many companies still cheerlead the virtues of work with high-minded messaging. For example, Spotify, a company that lets you listen to music, says that its mission is, quote, to unlock the potential of human creativity, unquote. Dropbox, which lets you upload files and stuff, says its purpose is, quote, to unleash the world's creative energy by designing a more enlightened way of working, unquote. David Spencer, a professor of economics at Leeds University Business School, says that posturing by companies like this, economists and politicians, dates at least to the rise of mercantilism in 16th century Europe. He writes, there has been an ongoing struggle by employers to venerate work in ways that can distract from its unappealing features. But such propaganda can backfire. In 17th century England, work was lauded as a cure for vice, Mr. Spencer said, but the unrewarding truth just drove workers to drink more. Internet companies may have miscalculated in encouraging employees to equate their work with their intrinsic value as human beings. After a long era of basking in positive esteem, the tech industry is experiencing a backlash, both broad and fierce, on subjects from monopolistic behavior to spreading disinformation and inciting racial violence. And workers are discovering how much power they wield. In November, some 20,000 Googlers participated in a walkout, protesting the company's handling of sexual abusers. Other company employees shut down an artificial intelligence contract with the Pentagon that could have helped military drones become more lethal. That's good. That's good that workers in this case are taking action against company policies they find to be unwieldy. By no means am I here to defend the corporate work world. You know?
No, and I think it's distressing that she has blurred the two to that extent, where you can't have conscientious workers who realize that they're actually the ones piloting, steering, and making the ship move.
And also enjoying it at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you clearly can, and you're right. She is, pretty negative. Let's go on. There's a little bit more. Mr. Hansen cited employee protests as evidence millennial workers could eventually revolt against the culture of overwork. He says people aren't going to stand for this, using an expletive, or by the propaganda that eternal bliss lies at monitoring your own bathroom breaks. He was referring to an interview with the former chief executive of Yahoo, gave in 2016, in which she said that working 130 hours a week was possible, quote, if you're strategic about when you sleep, when you shower, and how often you go to the bathroom. Ultimately, workers must decide if they admire or reject this level of devotion, and her comments were widely panned on social media. But since then, Quora users have eagerly shared their own strategies for mimicking her schedule. Likewise, Musk's pain-level tweets drew plenty of critical takes, but also garnered just as many accolades and requests for jobs. And look, the reality is, if people decide they don't want to work as much, fine. They'll be replaced by the people who do want to work. Because there's always going to be people who value productivity and value the feeling that they get from doing a good job and helping people get what they want. Those people will always exist. And if they don't, we're in big trouble. See you tomorrow night online. In the meantime, you can join us, freetalklive.com. Check out Aria at calltofreedomlive.com. Are you a cryptocurrency advocate? The Crypto Tip is the ideal outreach tool to help new people discover cryptocurrency. It's a printable business card size tip that you can give to service providers, preferably in addition to a good cash tip. When the server scans the QR code, it'll bring up an explanation of cryptocurrency, how to install a wallet, and allow them to claim the tip. If they don't claim the crypto, you get your tip refunded to you after a time period you specify. Plus, if they do claim the tip, you get an email alert. Create as many tips as you want at cryptotip.org. That's cryptotip.org.